veteran set the tone. Cavell Bigby Williams early. Skylar Mays late. And because of that, the Tigers have an early Saturday morning date with the Terrapins of Maryland. The SEC was doing great in the NCAA tournament until Ole Miss ran into Oklahoma and the Sooners put a beatdown on the Rebels. LSU baseball in the best baseball series in college this weekend. Pro day for LSU. We'll find out how fast Greedy ran. And the latest at the Chittimacha Open. But it's all about hoops, and it's all about the Tigers. Today, Friday, March 22nd, 2019.
Waters off the screen from Bigby Williams. Gets it back to Bigby. Down the lane. Dunk you very much. 34-23. Great execution. Starting up top. Great ball screen, and then Bigby Williams.
Use our size, you know, we've got a lot of size compared to them, so I know we could, you know, use our size in the interior on defense and on offensive glass and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I did today, and that's how we got the win.
Fields had the ball stolen by Waters. Down the near sideline, flips it across the lane to Reed. One-handed jam, Hayna. 25-19. How about the Tigers getting out and running?
It was pretty tough, hard-nosed team that, you know, who didn't let up. And they were very competitive, and, you know, that's something you're going to see throughout the whole March Madness.
We give it off to Waters. Nine on the shot clock. He works right side against Copeland. Now he drives baseline, flips a skip pass Reed. Extra pass Mays, open for three. Good!
Great pass by Naz Reed, Chris. Wow, one more pass. Excellent, unselfish play.
We were aggressive, and you know, we had a great game plan getting into the paint and using our size advantage. And you know, Nas did a great job getting the paint. Tremont was all over the place, and you know, all these guys did a great job.
Bruner, 6 seconds, 30 footer off the glass, too hard. Rebound, Copeland goes out to the left wing. He'll fire a three at the buzzer. It's no good. Tigers win. Tigers win. Survive and advance here in Jacksonville with a 79-74 victory over the Bulldogs of Yale. Tigers move to 27-6 on the season. The Bulldogs season comes to an end as they fall to 22-8.
Thought our guys came out, and especially in the first half, we really executed our game plan. We wanted to attack the paint, and I think paint points in the first half, we kind of dominated them in the paint. And I thought we were good defensively in the first half. We did a great job, you know, getting to their shooters, making it tough for those guys to get to the paint.
The story of the game as LSU survives to beat Yale 79-74. And a great good afternoon to you and yours. Special thanks to my producer extraordinaire, Clinton Domain, for putting that together. And kind of tells a tale. It was a game of two halves, and we'll delve into it. We have a busy, busy day planned for you and yours. I've got to tell you, big surprise. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway has now reopened. The interior renovations have been completed, and my goodness gracious, I've seen pictures of it, and it is spectacular. It's all fresh. It's all new. The flat screen TVs, about 30 of them everywhere, 32 cold beers on tap, and so much more. The new, improved, better than ever Hooters. I thought Hooters made you happy. Hooters is going to make you hysterically happy now. It is a beautiful, beautiful, brand new venue. You've got to check it out. The Tigers will take on Maryland. What a great place to start your Saturday. Check into Hooters, and the Tigers will take on the Maryland Terrapins, 11:10 a.m. tip from Jacksonville. I can't tell you how many people text me, emailed me, about this LSU basketball team. They're so talented, but my goodness gracious, they just don't know how to play with a lead, do they? They will make the game interesting. Somehow, some way, I don't know if they settle too much for jumpers when they should have attacked the paint like they did in the first half, or if they get lackadaisical defensively. All these things come into play, and Yale made a run, as every team's going to do. They made a run, and thank goodness LSU figured out a way by stepping to the free throw line and making shots down the stretch. So that was significant. So it's a 3-seed LSU versus a 6-seeded Maryland. I really thought Belmont would win. I had Belmont in my bracket, so that's history. I had Ole Miss winning in the bracket. That's history. So anyway, LSU in the round of 32, and the SEC was doing great, undefeated. The Gators from Florida beat Nevada. LSU, a big winner. Kentucky was a big winner as well. Now, Ole Miss loses today. Mississippi State's playing. You've got Tennessee playing right now. So we'll see how the rest of the league does. Speaking of SEC news, Bryce Drew fired as the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores. I know they had a rough season. They were winless in the league. I really thought they'd get a new, get one more year out of him. But the new athletic director that came in February, I believe, he was running the G League of the NBA, said nope. And what they're going to try to do, which may set a new trend, is to reassign Bryce Drew within the athletic department so they don't have to pay his buyout. Bryce Drew, done. Tennessee leading Colgate 13-8. Let me tell you what we have in store for you and yours. Our good friend Jeff Duncan is in Jacksonville, covered LSU. We'll get the very latest report on the Tigers and the Terps from Jeff Duncan. Big, big baseball series. Big, big baseball series. LSU and Georgia, two top 10 ranked teams in college baseball. And we're going to get an unbiased opinion on this series. Managing editor of Perfect Game, Patrick Ebert, will join us at around 2:30, 2:35-ish, something like that. So we'll get the lowdown on that. We'll get the very latest from another LSU golfer at the Chittimacha Open, Jacob Bergeron, who played his freshman season at LSU and then left to go make his mark professionally. We'll see how Jacob has fared. Another Chamber of Commerce day. The golf gods have shone brightly on Acadiana for this weekend. You couldn't ask for better. The NFL Pro Day has taken place and has been completed. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate was there, and he will tell us how the Tigers fared, and we'll update you throughout the course of the day on the goings-on of the NCAA tournament. Right now, Texas Tech big over Northern Kentucky, 53-38, 10 minutes to go in the ballgame. At the half, Kansas State and UC Irvine tied at 30 apiece. The other game that I did not have, I thought Syracuse was going to take care of business over Baylor, but Baylor's point guard, shooter extraordinaire, had a bad toe, wasn't nearly as effective, but even with that, Baylor cruises over the Cues. So big win for Scott Drew, whose brother Bryce Drew was let go today. So there you have it. All right, busy day. Glad you are with us. Check out Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Just go walk in and take a look around. You're going to be absolutely amazed at the new look. It is brighter, lighter. The food is still spectacular. The televisions are here, there, and everywhere. And, of course, Hooters just makes you happy. Very, very happy. Big day for Shaquille O'Neal. He's joined Papa John's as their brand ambassador and a board member. No more Peyton Manning. Now it's Shaq's turn to try and get pizza sales at Papa John's up and better. So, with that in mind, let's take our first time out of the day. We're heading to Jacksonville for the very latest as LSU in the round of 32, trying to get to the Sweet 16. To do so, they got to beat that team formerly of the ACC, now in the Big Ten, the Maryland Terps. Fear the turtle. We'll be right back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show, Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Come on back.
Whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
There's nothing like March if your team is involved in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, LSU is. They're hanging around for the first weekend thanks to their five-point win over Yale. Our good friend Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, was in those very good seats. He wasn't around the guy, the poor guy that got the Diet Coke spilled all on him thanks to Emmett Williams. He's an experienced veteran reporter. He knows not to sit on the very front row, right, Jeff? Right?
Right, Jordy. That's a veteran move to get in that second row. You're in the best seat, but you're never going to have to worry about getting a lap full of Diet Coke or Coke. That was a fun story. Emmett Williams, I think, handled that very well.
He really did. First NCAA tournament game, you'd love to get off to a great start. And I thought, despite all the heroics down the stretch from Skylar Mays and the great plays from Tremont Waters and all that, I thought Cavell Bigby Williams was just – I thought he sent in a small version a kind of a Patrick Ewing Georgetown message to Yale. Not going to be nothing's going to come easy for you guys inside because I'm long, I'm lengthy, I'm going to block shots, I'm going to control the interior of the paint. And I thought that was pivotal for LSU.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he kind of is an afterthought for this team in a lot of ways. You know, people don't think about him, but Jordy, I think he's going to play in the NBA. I really do. I mean,
I do too.
You don't see him on a lot of mock drafts, but I mean, there's just not too many guys with his size and his athleticism. I thought one of the early plays in the game really displayed just how rare an athlete he is. He blocks a shot. Really, it was Naz Reid's man. Reynolds gets by him. And Bigby Williams comes out of nowhere, blocks the shot, and then beats the entire Yale team down to the other end of the court for a layup to give them a 9-0 lead. You just don't see big men run the court like that. And I thought that early lead that LSU got in that game was critical because it really gave them a cushion to kind of keep Yale at bay. I mean, Yale knocked down some incredible shots in the last minute or so. But I felt like LSU was always in control of that game.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I never thought the outcome was in doubt. But LSU, for whatever reason, whether it's settling for jump shots instead of pounding the ball in the paint or getting a little lackadaisical with protecting the basketball or just kind of falling asleep at the wheel sometimes defensively, they just let teams get back in games, and it's just – I mean, if you want drama, watch LSU basketball.
Yeah, I agree. I think a little bit is the inexperience of the lineup. If Tremont Waters isn't in the game and you got a lot of young players making some sometimes hasty or questionable decisions, that goes with the territory, I think, with the inexperience. But I thought just getting over the hump yesterday, and I was really impressed with Yale. Very well coached, a veteran lineup with a lot of seniors and juniors that played a lot of basketball games. You knew they weren't going to be an easy out, and they weren't. And I think that game was much tougher than most of these 3-14 matchups you see just because of the makeup of Yale's roster. So, look, just getting by it, surviving it, I really like this matchup with Maryland tomorrow. And I think this game in some ways might be easier than the Yale game.
Okay, I was going to ask you about, you got a chance to see Maryland. Maryland likes to get up and down the floor. Belmont scared me because of their bigs that can roam around that three-point line and draw LSU's bigs out. They can all shoot it. So I'm personally thankful that Maryland won, to be quite honest with you. What is it about the Maryland matchup that you like that favors LSU?
Well, the style of play, you know, I think is better suited for LSU. You don't want to be playing Rick Byrd and those Belmont Bruins with that that five outside backdoor cutting. I mean, that's in 24 hours trying to prepare for that unique offense, I think is very difficult. So you don't have to worry about that now. And I think feel like size-wise, LSU really matches up well. We talked about Big B Williams and Nas Reed. I mean, they're going to match up with the two bigs that Maryland has inside, Bruno Fernando, who's a lottery, projected lottery pick in the NBA draft, and Jalen Smith inside. I just feel like they match up perfectly, and I think they just got better players all around than Maryland. So I like this matchup for LSU, and sometimes that happens in the tournament. You know, your matchup in the first round might be more difficult than your second round matchup, even though the seeding's different, and I think that's the case here.
Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, the Times speaking, kind enough to join us. What have you discovered today? Have you seen the players? What are they just kind of sequestered, scouring tape and going over scouting reports?
Yeah, no, we've just had media access to Tony Benford and the LSU locker room players. Of course, they came in for a little shoot around and the same with Maryland. So we've had a chance to visit with them, and I think both coaches are very confident in this game. You know, it's two teams, Jordy, that don't play very often. I think they've only met four times in their history. Mm-hmm. Maryland, of course, has a rich basketball history, but the last time they faced off, I think, was way back in the 80s or 70s. Chris Jackson was playing. So okay. It's been a while for LSU and Maryland to match up. And in some ways, this is kind of interesting, I think. Both the Big Ten and the SEC off to such strong starts
right
in the NCAA tournament. You got a matchup here of Big Ten and SEC teams. So we can kind of get a barometer of which conference maybe has had the best season so far in college basketball.
Yeah, Big Ten undefeated. The SEC was doing great until Oklahoma just played, I think, maybe the best game in the tournament. They shot like 80% and blew Ole Miss out of the water. My goodness gracious. Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. What sense do you get from the players and how they have reacted to getting that one game under their belt?
Well, I think they felt like, you know, talking to Cavell Bigby Williams yesterday after the game, you know, he's the one LSU player with NCAA tournament experience prior to yesterday when he, of course, played at Oregon. And he talked about how that first game can often be the most difficult because you got so many nerves, you got so many young players on this team that hadn't played in an NCAA tournament atmosphere. So I think most of them feel like, hey, we survived. Now let's just settle down, get into a rhythm, get into a routine, and play our game. And I really felt like even yesterday they did that. This team's had so many outside distractions this year. It's been well documented. They really are kind of focused on the task at hand, and I know sometimes they have a little bit of a tendency to lose their focus and let another team back in it. But overall, I don't think you could ask for a much better performance than what they had in that opener against Yale, because they got up so big and really kind of, you know, let Yale know that this wasn't going to be an upset. You give a team like Yale a lot of confidence and get them playing with the lead, that's a whole different challenge.
You are absolutely correct. Maybe one of the better first halves offensively I've seen LSU with their ball movement. I'm just curious. You're close to the bench. You see how these assistant coaches are all – it's kind of like a three-headed situation where they're all doing their thing. And it was cute where Skylar Mays late in the game was like, hey, settle down, guys. I got this. I guess we're all curious to see, and it's going to happen eventually. It's going to happen somewhere down the road. Maybe even Saturday, when it gets to be tight quarters and decisions have to be made, I guess everybody's kind of curious to see how Tony Benford and this staff is going to handle that, and that's the big unknown in my book.
Yeah, I think this is where we'll really see the impact of not having your head coach. Not, it's not just Will Wade's talent, X's and O's, and preparation ability, but it's just having another set of eyes and ears, another body to help in a quick turnaround of preparation. I mean, you got basically 24 hours to get ready for Maryland. This is when you're going to feel the stress on the coaching staff of not having your head coach because you had a week to prepare for Yale. Now you've got 24 hours to prepare for Maryland. So I think that's where the stress comes in. And that's one of the reasons why I like this matchup for LSU, just because I think Maryland will be easier to prepare for in a lot of ways than Belmont would have been because of that unique offense Rick Byrd runs.
You think those Kentucky fans are going to be pulling for LSU?
That's going to be interesting to see. I don't know. I mean, you know, there was such animosity after the
pit. I know.
You know, I don't know how they'll react, but, you know, there's always that SEC tribalism, Jordy.
Everybody, I hope so.
Together. Yeah, and the big blue mist is in effect here. There's a lot of blue fans running around here, as always.
They're ridiculous, yeah. And that's the other reason I didn't want Belmont to win. Everybody loves a little small school with the iconic coach, and everybody will be pulling for them. So I like the fact that Maryland's in it for LSU. Well, look, I greatly appreciate your time, and always be careful because you're always on television, man. So be careful, all right? Be careful.
I'll do my best. I'll get some major FaceTime again tomorrow with my colleague Amy Jeffs. So reach out, everybody. Reach out, America.
Reach out. We'll be watching, big boy. Thank you so much. Enjoy your stay in Jacksonville, man. Always a treat. That's Jeff Duncan, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. All right, we're going to shift some gears. Tennessee 26, Colgate 18, 7 minutes and about 10 seconds to go in the first half. LSU, Georgia baseball, that story's next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, we welcome you back. March Madness still going on. Tennessee taking on Colgate as we speak. And the SEC so far, other than Ole Miss, doing very, very well in NCAA tournament play. But there is a huge baseball series taking place in Athens, Georgia at Foley Field when LSU takes on the Georgia Bulldogs starting tonight at 6 p.m. And, of course, all the games will Friday's game will be on 103.7 The Game. Saturday will, I don't know, because of basketball. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But two teams in the top 10, depending upon what poll you follow. So I thought we'd get an unbiased opinion of things from one of the best in the business, and that is our good friend Patrick Ebert, the managing editor of Perfect Game. Patrick, it is baseball season, isn't it? How are you?
Good. How you doing, Jordy? It's good to be talking about baseball again.
I'm telling you. So give me your early thoughts on these two teams, starting with the host team, the Georgia Bulldogs, 19-2 overall, 3-0 in SEC play.
Yeah, I mean, what a start that Georgia's off to right now. And, I mean, you can say that about several SEC clubs right now, but, I mean, what Georgia's doing at 19-2, I mean, is pretty remarkable. And this is one of those programs that before last year, you know, that was kind of stuck, I don't want to say mediocrity, but just wasn't really one of the top contenders of the SEC. And even going into last year, they were considered more of a dark horse than a sure thing. And, you know, after last year, they lost some of their key pieces to graduation and a few other reasons. But this year, you know, man, I mean, starting with their Friday ace, Emerson Hancock, who looks like he could be one of the favorites for next year's draft, considering he's only a sophomore. And
right.
And he's not alone. You have all these very young pieces, and you point to the job that Scott Strickland and his staff has done recruiting there and getting all this young talent. And now they're finding their way. They're finding their roles. They're experienced. And man, they're just flat-out dominant right now.
They were the number 8 national seed in last season's NCAA tournament, and they keep building and building. They're riding a 10-game winning streak. You mentioned this right-hander at Emerson Hancock, an 0.58 ERA, and teams are only batting 152 against him. What does he have? Is he a power pitcher? Is he a hit the strike zone kind of a pitcher? What is he?
Yeah, I mean, he potentially has it all. I mean, LSU fans, for comparison, may may look to someone like Kevin Gausman, you know, as the,
okay.
as a comparison. You know, here's a kid that's 6'3", 6'4", just perfectly projectable, as we like to say in the scouting world. Like
okay.
A young man that, you know, is good right now but could continue to get better. Throws mid-90s, has a good breaking ball, has a good changeup, has the three pitches needed to succeed. Last year the numbers weren't pretty, but, you know, you always got to look past the numbers because he was doing some of the small things well. You know, he was hitting his spots, changing speeds, doing all those different things. And this year he's more of a polished, you know, kind of more of a finished product. And he still has growth to do, both physical and with the art of pitching. And like I said, you know, he could be one of the favorites early to go first overall in next year's draft.
Patrick Ebert of Perfect Game, kind enough to join us. Not only do they have some arms, but apparently they're pretty good with the bat in their hands, batting .296 as a team and fourth in the SEC with 24 homers. For LSU fans, they're going to want to watch this. Who does Georgia send to the plate that they need to be leery of?
Yeah, it's kind of a similar, you know, as far as their lineup goes, similar to LSU in the fact that they go nine deep. You know, they have a very good table-setting group of hitters at the top of the order and some good bats in the middle. You know, their shortstop, Cam Shepard's their leadoff hitter, and I think he's hitting somewhere in the .250 range, but that's not going to continue all season long. And they have guys like LJ Talley, Riley King, Tucker Maxwell, who was our player of the week a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Just these guys are the guys that are getting the job done in the middle of the lineup. They have a speed component. You know, they're able to cause some problems once they reach base. And, yeah, it's just – it's kind of one of those teams that you just watch, and they just have everything going right for them early in the season. You know, they're getting on base, they're causing problems, they're driving in runners, the pitching is preventing runners, and, you know, not surprisingly, that's why they're 19-2 right now.
So what you're trying to tell me is Georgia's legit, right?
yes. Georgia's very legit. That's very legit.
LSU, on the other hand, have you been, some would say – disappointing, but they're 16-5. They swept Kentucky. Maybe Kentucky's not the greatest of the greats in the SEC, but they're 3-0. What has been your general view of this LSU baseball team with 21 games under their belt?
Yeah, you know, we had LSU number one coming into the year, and we looked at all the different pieces that they had from a variety of different, you know, viewpoints. And one, they had players that were drafted last year that decided to come back, you know, from Zach Watson and Zach Hess, you know, Antone DePlantis, who's having a tremendous year as a senior and is chasing the all-time hits record. And then you look at the young talent. They had an incredible freshman recruiting class. You had a lot of sophomores stepping up. You had two key players coming off an injury in shortstop Josh Smith and right-handed pitcher Eric Walker. And, you know, when you look at all those different reasons, we just thought they had the best combination of talent, not to mention one of the best coaching staffs led by Paul Maneri, and just the job that he does, like finding roles for all those different players. I think the biggest knock for them is they went to Austin and played Texas and got swept, you know, and that obviously dropped them, you know, about halfway down the top 25, at least for us. But that's not to say that they still don't have those components that make them a promising team. I think sweeping Kentucky was a nice step in the right direction. Starting with Georgia, they have a really, really brutal stretch coming up here. So how well they play against Georgia on the road is going to be key.
What has been your thoughts on Zach Hess, who will go against this phenom tonight as a Friday night matchup?
Yeah, you know, one thing about Hess is he does not shy away from this type of matchup. And there's been a lot of debate as to whether or not he's in the right role as a Friday starter, but it kind of seems like when everything's going up against him and his back's against the wall is when he performs at his best. You know, we kind of saw that a little bit in Omaha 2 years ago, and that's when he was being used as a closer. But, you know, we saw it at times last year, even though the overall numbers weren't great. And then he continued that over the summer when he played in the Cape Cod League. And the stuff is there. You know, there's no denying the stuff. And I think a lot of the times with Hess, it's a matter of, you know, sometimes I think he can get too aggressive. And, you know, he'll challenge hitters. He never backs down. And when he does that, you know, he can get hit hard at times. But I think when he's locked in and he's really doing a good job mixing up between his fastball and his sliders when he's at his best. So I think it's a great matchup. I think he's a really good pitcher in the role that he has. And I like that Coach Maneri has stuck with him through this.
Patrick Ebert, perfect game, kind enough to join us. We talked LSU. We talked Georgia. Boy, Mississippi State must be pretty good too, huh?
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's who LSU plays next week, if I'm not mistaken. So, it doesn't get any easier. Mississippi State has really been incredible, and I think if you were going to do a redraft of the top 25, it'd be really hard not to put them at number one. We currently have UCLA number one, and we have Mississippi State number two. But, you know, the emergence of their freshman, I don't even know it's an emergence because, I mean, this is a young man that was a first-round pick last year, and that's JT Ginn, who's their Saturday starter, and he follows their Friday guy, Ethan Small. And their Sunday guy, Keegan James, is, you know, he's just as good as those first two guys. And then they have one of the deepest lineups, one of the deepest bullpens. It's just everything's clicking for them, similar to Georgia. You know, if you wanted to have a SEC championship right now between Georgia and Mississippi State, I don't think anybody would complain about that matchup because those two teams are playing at their very best right now.
Who else? If you had to rank the SEC, I guess you already said Mississippi State number one, Georgia number two. Who would you have third? Give me the five best teams in the league in your opinion.
Yeah, I'd probably put Auburn next. I think I don't know if I'd call it flying under the radar, but, you know, when it comes to the amount of fanfare right now that Mississippi State is getting, you know, I think Auburn's a little under the radar in that regards. And, you know, it's not surprisingly, those two teams are playing one another this weekend. But Auburn's top two starters can match Mississippi State's, and Tanner Burns and Jack Owen, a pair of sophomores who have been just phenomenal to this point in the season. You know, I think LSU is in the mix with other teams as far as, like, Texas A&M and even Vanderbilt for, like, say, the 4 and 5, 6 spots right in there.
Okay.
And right now, kind of Florida and Ole Miss are kind of – they got some questions to answer. They're both really talented ball clubs, but – you know, I think the consistency just isn't there yet for them. But in Arkansas, I mean, I keep forgetting about Arkansas. I don't know how. They were the national runner-up and almost the national champion a year ago, and they're right in that mix too. So, I mean, it's the SEC West in particular is loaded.
Ridiculous.
With Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, Mississippi State, and Texas A&M, and Ole Miss. I mean, 6 out of the 7 teams are all legitimate national title contenders.
Wow, that's ridiculous. You said UCLA, you've got them number one. Who are some other teams outside of the SEC that you're very high on?
I love Stanford. I think the Pac-12 in particular between Oregon State, Stanford, and UCLA is so much different than what it has in recent years. And I think it's just kind of, you know, that combination of everything going right, kind of what I've talked about with Georgia and Mississippi State, where you have all these different players from all the different class levels and the combination of all these different recruiting efforts that are just kind of piling up and kind of turning into this perfect storm for them. Right now, I think the Big 12 is a little bit of a, I guess, a mess, you know, to lack of a better term, just because I like Texas, but I'm still not convinced on them. Texas Tech has now lost two series already early in the season. Oklahoma might be the best team in the Big 12. And, again, I'm not convinced that they're legitimate either because they really haven't had a stiff test. And then the ACC, I mean, it's hard to say. I think Louisville is a really good program, but we'll see just how good they are when they start playing teams like NC State and North Carolina.
Yeah, I want to see Texas get away from that turf field and go on the road and see what they can do. They took care of LSU. There's no question about that. But we'll see. All right, so it's a pretty good matchup, LSU-Georgia. That might be the premier matchup of the weekend?
One of them, yeah. I think Mississippi State and Auburn would be the premier matchup for this weekend's action. But I think LSU and Georgia is just behind. You know, it would be the 1B to the 1A.
Gotcha.
I just think it has everything. I think the two offenses are equally matched. You know, I think Georgia has the clear edge pitching-wise, but I think LSU, the pieces are starting to come together. I'll be very interested to see how freshman Cole Henry does on Saturday, and then Eric Walker on Sunday, of course. And the bullpen, you know, you're figuring some pieces out there too. So, Georgia obviously has the edge, not only being the home team, but just being the better team record-wise. But that doesn't mean LSU can't go into Athens and win that thing.
All right. Thanks for the update on baseball. We're going to have to do this more often. You are way too good, the first not to have you on more often. So we'll lean on you, big guy. But thank you for your time, and have a great weekend.
You do the same. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Patrick Ebert, managing editor of Perfect Game, LSU, Georgia. Georgia's pretty darn good and should be an interesting hitting challenge for LSU as they go up against this sophomore with who's just really, 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 really good. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We'll update you. We may have an upset brewing. We may have one brewing. If you're a Wildcat of Kansas State fan, look out. We'll update you on that, tell you how the Volunteers are doing, and everything else in the NCAA tournament. That's next on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Minutes after the hour. Welcome back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Still more to come. Hot topics in hour number two. The latest from the Chittimacha Open and the latest from LSU's Pro Day. But lo and behold, is it happening again? Is it going to happen again? 4:02 to go in the first period. 16th seeded Gardner-Webb 30. Virginia, the number one seed, 22. Maryland Baltimore County beat the Wahoos last year as a 16-1 seed. So you know that Virginia's got to be thinking a little bit. Oh, my goodness. And we've got a possible upset brewing. 5:38 to go in the ballgame. 13th-seeded UC Irvine. The Anteaters, 59. Kansas State, 53. So stay tuned for that one. Tennessee with a 42-30 lead over Colgate at the half. Oklahoma with a blowout win over Ole Miss. Texas Tech 72, Northern Kentucky 57 in a relatively easy one. But I've been very impressed with this UC Irvine team. They just got another dribble drive layup to get it to 61-53. So stay tuned. You know Virginia's got to be going, here we go again. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. Good team. But, boy, when the tournament comes, wow. Wow, oh, wow. Again, LSU. Let me bring Clint in here real quick because he knows all what's going on. We've got LSU tomorrow, 11:10, here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show, you know, 30 minutes before
10:30.
That. 10:30, okay. 10:30 on the pregame show. What happens to LSU baseball because of that?
It's going to be a local broadcast only, Jordy, because that game was originally scheduled to start at 12 o'clock, 11:30 pregame. So can't necessarily JIP join in progress in that situation because you don't know how long the game could last, so they're going to wind up just having LSU basketball right here on 103.7 Game. But don't worry, we got you covered with Sunday's action. Maybe it's a rubber match. Maybe it's LSU looking for the sweep.
Yeah.
Let's do it right here on 103.7 The Game. That's going to be at 11 o'clock, first pitch, 10:30 pregame.
See, I knew you would know everything. I knew you would know it.
Somebody's got to know it.
Yeah, not me. That's too complicated for me. I don't want to know that. So how about Virginia? What do you think's going through those Virginia fans' minds? Now, it's still, granted, it's just the first half, but they were down by 10 to another number 16 seed. They got to be like, oh, my God. Deja vu all over again, as Yogi would say.
I think they just straight up don't want to be put as a number one seed ever again after today. I think that's just all they want is saying no more number one seed. Just put us as number 16 next year. We'll make a
please,
run.
Please, no, just put it number two, number three, anything but number one. My goodness gracious sakes alive. What are your thoughts on, and we'll get more into this in Hot Topics, I'm curious as to your thoughts on LSU Maryland. I like the matchup personally.
I like it too, Jordy. Mind you, again, I would have loved Belmont LSU because I feel like that one is a lot more winnable. I feel like Belmont would have been a lot more winnable. Maryland's just going to be a straight up entertaining ball game between these two programs.
Belmont scared me, man. They can shoot the basketball, and they're going to backdoor you, and they're going to spread you out. I think it's a better matchup for LSU from an athletic standpoint. I think Maryland will get their attention. I think Naz Reid and Cavell Bigby Williams will see two bigs on the other team, and they'll get – I like the focus, and I like LSU's backcourt. I think that's the difference in the ball game. Maryland has a lottery pick, big. So, you know, Naz Reid is going to try and make his mark. He's going to try and prove that he's better than he is. And so I just like the matchup. Plus, I said it earlier, and people may scoff at this, but, you know, LSU has their little contingent of fans, but there's three other sets of fan bases that are going to be in that arena. And everybody always starts pulling for that underdog, the little engine that could in Belmont. So now I think Big Blue Nation, Kentucky, which will fill up 75% of the arena, I think they will pull for LSU over Maryland with that SEC pride. At least I'm hoping Kentucky will. I'm going to send a message to some of my Wildcat friends in the broadcasting world and get them to do that. But we'll see. So let's update again. What's going on? There's so many games on so many different stations. I'm trying to get all the scores. So let's see. UC Irvine, 61. Kansas State, 56, with 4:27 to go in the ball game. And that would be something. One of the better nicknames in college basketball, the Ant Eaters. And with 3:03 minutes to go in the first half, Gardner Webb, 33. Virginia, 25. Interesting in watching Houston taking on Georgia State later on. Mississippi State will take on Liberty. That's a 5:12. North Carolina, a 1 taking on 16-seeded Iona in the ball game. VCU and UCF, that's another 8-9 matchup. Iowa State, good ball club, a 6-seed taking on 11th-seeded Ohio State. Virginia Tech, a 4 taking on 13th-seeded St. Louis. So some good ball games. Iowa with a 79-72 win over Cincy today. Oklahoma 95, Ole Miss 72. It was over before halftime. Texas Tech 72, Northern Kentucky 57. Some of the earlier games today. So Kansas State trailing by 6 with UC Irvine on the free throw line with 4:21 to go. Gardner Webb has increased their lead now to 9:36-27 with 1:50 to go in the first half. My goodness gracious, Virginia, you got to be kidding me. Got to be kidding me. All right, we'll update you on all the scores in the hour number 2. We have our Hot Topics segment. We'll find out how another former LSU golfer, Jacob Bergeron, how he did round 2 of the Chittimacha Open at La Triomphe. Brooks Cabina will join us from The Advocate and tell us everything we need to know about LSU's Pro Day today. It's all coming your way in hour number 2. 63-59, Anteaters over Kansas State. And with 1:44 to go in the first half, it's Gardner-Webb 36, Virginia 27. Let the madness roll. Back for hour number 2 here on Acadiana's number 1 sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. This is The Jordy Helfrich Show.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Packers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number 2 of 2. UC Irvine and Kansas State battling it down with 1:25 to go. The Anteaters just hit a 3-ball from the deep corner. 66-61 is the score for that one. That's a 13 seed versus a 4 seed. Get your brackets ready. And it's gotten a little bit tighter between Virginia and Gardner-Webb, 36-30 at the half in that one. Busy, busy second hour planned for you and yours. We'll head out to La Triomphe Country Club for round two of the Chittimacha Open. Currently, a gentleman by the name of Lauer and Yates are at 11 under par. Wittenberg and Boo Weekly are at 10 under par. We're going to talk with Jacob Bergeron about his round, the former LSU Tiger. And Brooks Cabina will join us after that to talk about LSU's Pro Day. And, of course, we'll update you across the board on what's happening in the NCAA tournament. Without further ado, though, let me bring in my partner here to take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, baby.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with
five
big questions headed into your weekend. Now, let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
All right. Can't wait to see what CD has up his sleeve today. Boy, here we go. Kansas State just knocks down a three. I'll get to you in just a second. 1 minute to go. 66-64. Can the Anteaters hold on, knock down free throws,
no,
and win this thing? What do you think?
No, we don't want that to happen, Jordy.
Oh, you got K-State going a ways. I see.
Hey, you know, hey, I got to keep that bracket at least somewhat in control. Because trust me, Jordy, I got them not lasting past the second round, but I wouldn't mind being able to hold down.
Oh,
only getting two wrong so far with the bracket.
Good.
That's kind of where I want to start off, Jordy. What's your bracket looking like right about now?
My bracket was good until Syracuse lost and Ole Miss lost. That's the only two I've got. I've got Kansas State winning as well. Irvine just missed a layup, but then Kansas State came down on the other end and threw the ball out of bounds to somebody on the bench. So we're coming down to the serious cases here with 35 seconds to go. And the shot is about a 8 second differential shot clock,
yeah,
game clock. So we'll see.
It is getting ridiculous with the UC Irvine matchup. Kansas State, for what it's worth, Jordy, I missed out on that Mississippi Ole Miss game because I thought Ole Miss was going to win that one. But Oklahoma came out the gates extremely fast. 11-0 run,
yes,
to start things off. And they were just mollywopping them from the jump street. And then the Belmont game, I wound up missing out on. And I was disappointed in that. But still, 15 out of 16 the first day, currently 17 of 19.
You're good.
I'm
not in the money. You're in the money. 17 seconds to go. Kansas State just fouled. Irvine, a chance to make it a two-possession game if they knock it down the free throws.
Yeah.
And Bruce Weber, is he going to freeze the shooter or not? Not yet. Anyway, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Continue.
So, like I was saying, Jordy, you know, I'm doing well. You're doing okay. Trust me, there was a guy heading into today who was doing pretty darn good, 16 of 16 in our Pete's $1 million bracket challenge. But Iowa played spoiler and broke the perfect bracket streak. No more perfect brackets. But trust me, Acadiana, you're still going to get $1,000 if you have the best bracket when it's all said and done.
Mr. Pete just went, whew, thank goodness.
Oh, dude, he
thank
is.
Goodness. He is like, where am I going to come? I know they take insurance out for these things, but my goodness gracious.
Like I said, it's never happened before. So, like I said, now in this case, you can say the brackets have been busted. But, man, I got to talk about Tom Izzo, Michigan State. A lot of getting a little heated with Aaron Henry. And there's a lot of people, depending on who you talk to in the media, saying not a good look for Tom Izzo. I'm saying, you know, the guy was trying to get his team motivated and try to get this guy in the game. And it worked. They managed to rally and get the win.
Yes,
Michigan State
did.
As a two seed. So that was huge for them. I don't see the problem here, Jordy. Do you agree with me with that one?
I agree with you. I'll explain a little bit. But Irvine just knocked down the two free throws. Kansas State missed. It's a 68-64 game with 7 seconds to go. And the Anteaters will go to the free throw line. And moving on, 13 beats a four. Hello to the Anteaters. Look, Tom Izzo is one of the best coaches in college basketball. He knows exactly what he's doing. That whole thing, I believe it was staged. I think he was trying to rally the troops. I really do. I think he was rallying the troops. He didn't just point to one player. He got after his coaches. He got after everybody. And afterwards, he said, you know what? If Clint Domain, producer extraordinaire, doesn't do his job, I'm going to hold him accountable. This is not the time to say my bad. If it's my bad, you're out of here. Yeah. You're out of here. Ain't no time for my bad. This is a one-and-done situation. I like it.
Exactly.
Like it.
How can you not like the fact that you're seeing your boy getting things done and making a statement, trying to get these guys riled up and ready to go to attack the day? It's just fantastic to see in terms of what we see with certain coaches nowadays.
He's being true to himself, and so you cannot fault the man for that. He did get close, and he did start pointing that finger, and he got nose to nose, and Cassie, the headband wearing point guard, had to kind of get in between them. But then Tom started getting after everybody else. I think it was staged. I think it was planned. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. He is the puppet meister. He has got them on a string, and it paid off. They won, and they advanced.
Exactly. Huge for them, Jordy. And now we're going to move over to the big upset, even though everybody saw it coming. Murray State, the 12 seed, upsetting the 5th seed in their matchup last night.
Wow.
John Moran, my goodness, that man was phenomenal. First triple-double since Draymond Green did it back in, I believe, 2012 when that happened. And it got me thinking, Jordy, a lot of people have been saying in the mock drafts, John Moran going to be landing
Pelicans
around the Pels. Is he going to look good in a Pels uniform or what, Jordy?
What are you going to do with Elfrid Payton? And what are you going to do with Jrue Holiday? You can't. No, they got to get. They got to. I don't know. 70-64, Irvine, the winner over Kansas State. I'm sorry. He's a very, very good player. Marquette looked like they. You talk about deer in the headlights, or as Nick Saban used to say, the brook trout look. Yeah. Other than Marcus Howard, everybody else was El Stinko. They couldn't play.
They could not play, like, not one bit. And it was, I guess you said it was amazing to kind of see how all that went down. But everybody saw it coming, Jordy. So would you consider this an upset, Marquette over Murray State? Because it felt like the Racers had a lot of momentum going for them heading into the tournament.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to call an upset because the lower seed got beat. But in modern college basketball, none of this stuff surprises me anymore. I'm not surprised that UC Irvine won over Kansas State. I'm not surprised at all. Now, I got to tell you, I would be shocked if Gardner Webb holds on and beats Virginia as a number one seed going down two straight years in a row. I would be shocked.
That's what I'm saying, Jordy. Next year, the committee needs to put him as the 16 seed. We need to have it three straight years where you have the 16 beat a one. Virginia gets the redemption, and they don't have to ever hear about them losing to a 16 seed ever again because they won as a 16 seed for the third straight year, further showing anything can happen in the NCAA tournament.
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. Next.
How amazing is it, Jordy? Yeah. We got to talk about it, though. The transfer portal, it is making moves. In fact, an LSU Tiger just threw himself in the transfer portal in Tay Province.
Yep.
Tay Province. How interesting is that, Jordy? Kind of seeing him bounce out, considering the fact there's going to be a lot of high-level running backs joining the stable.
I think he sees the handwriting on the wall. He's going, man, this Clyde Edwards-Alaire, he's pretty good. This Chris Curry, he's pretty good. Now they got these two studs coming in as freshmen. I may not see the field for a while. Let me go somewhere else where I can play. So it's understandable. It really, truly is. Everybody wants playing time, baby. Everybody.
Everybody does.
That's walk-ons, right? Everybody deserves
a little
playing time. There you go.
I love it, Jordy. I love it. Meanwhile, Ed Ogeron, he says straight up with NOLA.com mentioned it, he wishes there wasn't a transfer portal. Would you rather see that go the way of the dodo bird, or is it just too late? You can't put the toothpaste back in the tube?
No. I've said it before. If you tell coaches they can't leave before their contract is up, then players shouldn't leave. But if coaches can leave anytime they want and go get a better job for more money, that's all the players want. They want a better job for them, a place where they can go play and show off their skills. So, no, I'm all for it. Let them have it. Let the players go.
All right, Jordy, last one here. We're going to look over, instead of talking college basketball when it comes to LSU, we got to talk college baseball with LSU over in Athens, Georgia. Definitely going to be a fun weekend series. One of the best pitchers for the Bulldogs is going to be out there tonight. 5-0 0.56 ERA. The guy is a beast. What's going to be the biggest key for just tonight's matchup for LSU to come away with the win in Athens?
Be selective. Jump on pitches that he makes as a mistake. And hope that Emerson Hancock, 5-0, 0.58 ERA, 31 innings pitched, 8 walks, 37 strikeouts. Hope he comes back to earth and a little reality sets in. If this guy keeps pitching like he's pitching, don't like it. Don't like it at all. So we'll see. But big series between two teams ranked in the top 10. And LSU, last time they went on the road, didn't fare so well against Texas. Now we'll see. Both teams 3-0 in SEC play. LSU a 5-game win streak, but Georgia's got 10 straight. They're 19-2. So a big test for LSU. There you have it. Hot topics du jour for the day. We'll take a timeout. That brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Wherever your travels are taking you this weekend, bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef with you because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. We're talking the Chittimacha Open next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back. This is the Jordy Helpert Show. The weather is so great. If it weren't for work and the NCAA basketball tournament, man, I'd love to be on a golf course hitting that little ball, and I'd hit it everywhere. But round two of the Chittimacha Open at La Triomphe is underway as we speak. We had a couple of ex-LSU Tigers on the show yesterday, if you remember correctly. And in Zach Wright and Ben Taylor. Now we're going to be fortunate enough to get another former LSU Tiger. He only played 1 year for LSU, had such an outstanding freshman season, decided to move on. He played so well, he qualified for the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. And we're going to find out how Jacob Bergeron is doing these days on the web.com tour and how's he doing at the Chittimacha Open. Jacob, thanks for the time, buddy. How's the world treating you?
Hello?
Jacob, are you there?
Oh. Hey, Mr. Jordy, how's it going?
It's going great, man. How's everything going? How was your second round today?
It was better than the first one. That's all we could ask for, and continually improve every day. We shot 200 today. Currently sitting at 300 for the tournament, one inside the current cut. So hopefully that doesn't move to 3 or 4. So we'll see. But it's been a great week so far, and hopefully we get a chance to make a little noise this weekend.
There you go. I like that. 3 under par. Okay, we'll see. What's the current lead is what, 11?
Yes, sir. Yeah, they have a couple guys playing really good golf, and it's definitely out there. Golf course is playing firm and fast, but scores are gettable. The wind's down, and it's a lot of guys can go low, so you got to keep up with them.
You travel all over the country. What are your thoughts on how the Chittimacha Open is run and the people that are involved in the tournament?
And it's being a web.com event, a PGA sanctioned tournament. It's run as well as anything. Everybody I've met that's involved with the tournament is as good as you can expect. As good as, I mean, it's South Louisiana, and we're the best people in the world. I mean, we're the nicest people in the world, right?
So,
and
it's, yes. But,
and it's just like playing at home, and they've done everything to make me feel comfortable and feel at home. Even though it's the first time I've played La Triomphe and the Chittimacha, it's felt like home since I stepped on property. So can't ask for anything
awesome.
Better.
The decision to, after your freshman season, to decide to go pursue your future as a professional player. How tough of a decision was that? And any regrets?
Yeah, and it's any time you leave a place as special as LSU that early, it's really hard.
I bet.
I guess it's kind of hard to say that I have regrets now. And right now it's no because we're playing good golf. But, you know, if we win a national championship in the following years, then, yeah, I would like to have been part of that. But, it was a hard decision, but Coach Winstead and my team and everybody around just felt like the time was right to move on and to begin to learn to play professional golf, because as great of a program as Coach Winstead built at LSU, and it's like this across the board at all the great collegiate schools, college golf only prepares you so well for professional golf, and it's like that across all sports. I mean, college sports only prepares you so well. The only way to really learn to play professional sport is to do it, and that's we just felt like the time was right, and here we are.
Yeah, no regrets. You got to press on. How do you learn to play? What is the biggest difference to learn how to play and become a professional golfer?
The biggest thing for me, I've only been professional since last September, so I'm still learning this just as much as anybody else. But the biggest thing is being able to travel on your own, being able to manage your time. Because one thing, like I learned this Wednesday, they had pro-ams in the morning and the afternoon. So the golf course was completely closed for the whole day. Okay. And I wasn't part of that pro-am. So I had to learn the golf course in one round on Tuesday. And the golf course is jam-packed with people, contestants, and people playing in the pro-am all day Wednesday. So you want to try to get as much prep work as you can, but the bat facility, putting green, chipping green, everything is crowded. So you have to be very efficient in how you choose what you choose to do and how you use your time. That's just some prep work. And even as the tournament goes, how much practice do you do before and after rounds? And it sounds kind of cliche, but it's like that at each level. But it's a little bit different out here, especially managing time and traveling on your own is the biggest thing.
You're basically on your own. You don't have a team. It's Team Bergeron, right? That's it.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And it's just myself and Dad. Dad's been caddying since I turned pro, which is awesome. Pretty special. So it's mostly just Dad and I going everywhere and across the country, even out of country.
You're not like Kuchar, are you, when it comes to prize money for your caddy, are you?
No. He gets his full 15% of whatever I make. It just goes into the same bank account right now.
I love it.
But I guess he gets his full 100 then.
Jacob Bergeron, kind enough to join us. How's the course playing? You said it's kind of because of the great weather and the greens must be a little fast. Is it set up fairly for you guys?
It is. They've done a great job setting the golf course up. It's South Louisiana, so it's really difficult, especially with the winter we've had, to keep a golf course in perfect condition and watch yourself in good enough shape. The greens are, especially late in the day, get kind of baked out and pretty firm, so it gets really difficult to make a lot of putts. But, it's a fair test. They have some holes out here where you're really grinding to make par, and if you hit a bad shot, you're staring bogey, double bogey in the face sometimes. But they give you a few holes where you could really get after. You can make eagle on some par fives, and some of them are easier birdies. So it's a very good mix, and if you hit good shots, you're going to be rewarded with good birdie looks.
Okay, make me feel just totally inferior. When you hit a good one off the tee, how far does that thing roll out there?
It depends. I mean, there's some little wet spots in the lower parts and some slopes, but if it gets a good bounce, it'll tumble about 20, 30 yards or so after the carry. But that's just how it's just going to keep getting more and more as the week goes on with the good weather we're having. It's going to keep drying up, so it'll be a good time.
So 300. What are we? What yardage are you out there? Come on, make me feel silly.
Well, I tend to carry the driver on a normal day right around the 300 to 305 number. So, with firm fairways, a lot of them will roll out into the 320 neighborhood. But there's some guys out here that are flying where my ball ends up. There's some guys that can fly move it.
Real quick, before we let you go, we wish you the best of luck. We hope you make the cut line. What was your experience like at Shinnecock?
Oh, that was something I'll cherish for the rest of my life. And to be able to have Dad on the bag at Shinnecock and be able to share that we had three other guys outside myself that are either current or former LSU players.
Yeah,
be able to share that with those guys and to play a golf course as special as Shinnecock and to be a part of that U.S. Open is something really, really special. And hopefully we'll be back there soon and make more memories.
Absolutely. Well, you're representing LSU tremendously. We wish you nothing but the best of luck. And, you know, drive for show and putt for dough, right? I mean, it holds true on any level.
It. You're right. And there's always a purpose for that putt. So it sounds so cliche, you know, drive for show and putt for dough. That's where we make it out here. Everybody hits it good. Everybody hits it long. But it's all about getting a little white ball in the hole.
There you go. You got the Tigers advancing past Maryland tomorrow? Come on now.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had our share of turmoil this year in the basketball program, but we've shown a lot of toughness, and our boys know how to play. So I'm going to go with LSU with the win.
There you go. I know what you miss the most. I know what you miss the most about having to turn professional. You miss those Saturday nights in Tiger Stadium. I know you do, but that's okay. You're always welcome back.
Yeah. That's one thing. Just everything about LSU is something to miss.
Well, Jacob, look.
I'll be back.
Great decision. Good luck. And, man, look, when you make it big time, don't forget about us, all right?
Absolutely. Thank you very much,
bro. Good luck, man. Take care. Jacob Bergeron, former LSU Tiger, 3-under at the Chittimacha Open. Fingers crossed that the cut line doesn't move any bigger, that he can make it to the weekend. All right. Speaking about making it to weekends, LSU Pro Day next.
Upsets in the South. The 10-seed Iowa rallied from down 13 to beat Cincinnati.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 32 minutes after the hour, we got a barn burner. 8:28 to go. Tennessee 56, Colgate 53. Come on, Vols. And Virginia has taken a 4-point lead over Gardner-Webb, 42-38, 15 minutes and some change left in that one. But for 12 former LSU Tigers, today was a very important day for them as LSU held its annual pro day inside the indoor practice facility. Brooks Cabina, the advocate, our good friend, was there to watch it and will give us some information now. Brooks, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Jordy. How about yourself, man?
I'm doing terrific. Before we get to football, what do you think of LSU hoops against Yale?
Well, it got kind of close towards the end there, but they pulled it off. That's part of the madness. I guess we'll see how long it goes.
That's right. Okay. What were you looking for today? Who were you most interested in? And tell us what they did.
Well, I was most interested to see what Nick Brissett and John Battle did. They had the most to gain from today.
Okay.
And, you know, Nick, you know, during the NFL Combine, he came off with a 4.62 official 40-yard dash time, which with the running backs wasn't a very fast time. And if he was going to move up in the draft, he needed to improve on that. So did John Battle. And today, John Battle improved, but Nick Brissett, he hit a 4.74, which was the full tenth of a second slower than what he did in the combine.
Ooh.
So I'm not sure if he helped his case on that end. But Battle, he moved up to a 4.6 flat. He was up in the mid 4.6 range earlier. So he's gotten faster throughout the off season, and he's been working out in Florida, and that should help his case out a little bit. He was on the fringe, right around probably seventh round, late day three, somewhere around there. If not an undrafted free agent, but with Nick Brissett's day to day, it's hard to say where exactly he'll fit if he is drafted at all.
Brooks Cabina, kind enough to join us. I noticed Foster Moreau just got measured. He didn't do any of the drills. He didn't do any of the timing things. Did you think he had done enough at the combine
Foster,
to warrant that? Okay.
Yeah, Foster had been very impressive, both in the Senior Bowl and in Pro Day. Throughout his time at LSU, didn't really show his ability to pass catch and run the way he did. That's just not the way he was used. He was mostly used as a blocking tight end, and hardly as much as a passer. And that's not just from you know, media viewing at all. I mean, it's also what scouts and NFL teams have asked him. We talked to him about that after Pro Day today. He said, you know, most of the people that talked to him didn't expect him to have this kind of offseason. So whenever he got there today, didn't have to run the 40, didn't run those things, because he had already proven that in the combine and at Senior Bowl. And if you notice also, Devin White and Greedy Williams, they didn't run their 40s again either, because right. They were blistering in the combine. Yeah. But both Devin and Foster and Greedy, all three of them ran through position drills in front of the scouts and teams as well. So, you know, and Foster Moreau was catching passes from none other than Matt Flynn, former BCS national champion. So he actually convinced him to come out there, and it was pretty interesting to see.
I wonder if Matt Flynn gets a little per diem for doing that, you think?
No, I think he's probably just happy to be back in throwing the ball.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe they'd throw him a dime or two. I don't know. You know, Garrett Brumfield was out there. He did all the things. Where do you see Garrett? What's the scuttlebutt on Garrett?
Well, Garrett, from the folks I've talked to, he a lot of media is high on him, maybe early day three, but kind of fifth round, sixth round. But from talking to some others who cover the draft and what they hear from teams, it's more likely he's in the seventh round to undrafted range. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much his pro day did today to change that. We haven't really got a chance to kind of talk around on that yet. But, I mean, his 40 isn't probably going to be as influential as Nick's is. I mean, he's an offensive lineman. But, you know, his 24 bench press is at 225. You know, that's kind of in not going to be at the top range of most offensive linemen. So his strength and his abilities, he's probably going to have to lean on what his film is, his leadership, his intelligence, which if you paid attention at all to his story, he's a very intelligent guy, very eccentric as well. So, you know, today was a good chance for him to get evaluated, because he wasn't invited to things like the Senior Bowl or the NFL PA Bowl or the NFL Combine. So this is really the first chance most scouts have to take a look at him, but he'll have his opportunity to also go out to workouts and interviews with teams leading up to the draft as well.
Bruce Cabina of The Advocate. A lot of people were surprised when Ed Alexander opted to go into the NFL draft. How did Ed Alexander do? He did everything today. How did he fare?
Well, he's pretty strong, 28 on the bench press. You know, his speed on the cones and shuttles, I mean, he's a nose tackle, 319 pounds. So, you know, what they're really mostly looking for is his strength and, you know, a little bit of his agility in those three-cone drills. So, you know, that helps out seeing how mobile he is. But, you know, he's a big guy, you know, 6'2", and it's almost 6'2", 319 pounds. And, you know, he showed that with his strength on the bench. So, you know, he probably put himself in pretty good range today. But, from what people had seen from him before, because it was also his first day of evaluation, but he's also sitting on that fringe, probably get a look at camp, and if he makes a team, probably be on that free agent round as well.
David Ducray, here's a fullback. Looks like he ran pretty well. Is there a spot in the NFL for him, you think?
Well, see, a lot of these guys that we're talking about, so 12 guys go into this pro day, and we all know the ones that are going to get drafted high. Devin, Greedy, and Foster kind of made his way up in the middle. The rest of these guys are on the fringe, and, you know, all these guys have an opportunity to make it into the NFL, and most likely going to be what they do in camp. And, you know, with free agency, I think this conversation comes up every year, like, what exactly does that mean? And, you know, with David, the interesting thing is that, you know, he was a highly touted fullback coming out of high school, number one, according to 247, and he just never, you know, really saw the field that much, was backup fullback last year as well. I mean, he showed some speed, showed some strength, but he's going to have to prove that in camp. Because most of that isn't shown on film and what he's done. And that's to say for a lot of these guys. Like Ed Parris, too, you know, he worked out at safety today. And, you know, there's a whole stretch of these guys that just probably are going to have to really show these teams what they can do in camp.
Does Cole Tracy kick field goals at the pro day, or does he not?
If he did, I didn't see it. We were out interviewing with Ed Ogeron and a couple of the other players while there was still some stuff going on in the field. If Cole did kick, it was after everybody else had gone and we'd moved into the indoor part of it. But he was there in a hoodie and, you know, dressed out. But, you know, he got measured out, and I think that was mostly what he was there for today.
From a wow factor, who can you tell us was there from the NFL? Who was, like, the biggest names that was there?
Well, Mike Tomlin was there, and he's usually there every year. I heard he's, you know, he has some friends within the department, and, you know, likes coming down to Louisiana, and, you know, who doesn't? But that was the biggest name I saw out there. I was trying to check on see other head coaches that were there, but I just didn't spot me. But Tomlin seems to be a pretty big fixture every year, and that was the one I saw today.
All right. Back to Ed Orgeron. He's not a big fan of this transfer portal thing, is he?
No. He likes to hold on to his players. And, you know, it was kind of like that we saw in preseason camp last year with, you know, even before the transfer portal. He's never been a fan of transfers, as most coaches are. They want to keep their their rosters together. They want to keep their leverage on their side. And whenever the quarterbacks were leaving during preseason last year, he wasn't happy. And now once players are getting in the transfer portal this year, that's the more interesting part this time, because now players ultimately have the leverage, because if they ask for a transfer, they have to be put into the portal. The audition comes in after that. And I asked him about that yesterday, and he was talking about how, once they go in, they still have conversations. And he was able to, convince a few people to come back. Manny Netherly went into the portal, and he came back. And, you know, with Dave Robbins in there now, we'll see if he's able to convince him back. Ed's been a good recruiter, and he's done that in high school, so maybe that'll translate once people go into the portal.
What's been the most impressive thing to you at spring practice from what you've been able to see first-handedly?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because it's been 2 weeks leading into it, and really most of what we've been looking for is, parts of this new offense. And, but not only that, but how certain players are within injuries. And we've had to keep up with a lot throughout this offseason. But I think probably one of the things that stuck out the most is just how Derek Stingley's playing. He looks exactly like where he's supposed to be. And but surprises, I would say that, I keep seeing how the tight ends work and where they're playing at. Now, I'm surprised and like to see where Jamal Pettigrew and Thaddeus Moss are at, because that's a huge position for the offense. Yeah. And, TK McClendon's been able to catch really well from what we've seen. And, you know, they all look like they're pretty good at tight end. And, you know, Foster and his ability throughout the offseason that we've seen, it seems like they'll be able to fill in pretty nicely behind him.
Burks Cabina of The Advocate, I can't thank you enough for your time, but does our quarterback look like he's settled in? Does he look like he's getting better?
Well, that's difficult to say in individual drills, because we don't see him in scrimmages. I mean, whether his spirals look tighter if he's throwing it farther, I'm not sure. But, you know, he's going to be better. I just think another year in the system, and a lot of what they're working on now is stuff that he's familiar with. These new RPOs, stuff he ran in high school and over at Ohio State. I was talking to him earlier last Tuesday about it. He's just, you know, it's something that he's familiar with, and he wouldn't divulge too much into what exactly he was familiar with, because, you know, he wants to keep some of those new tendencies to themselves and not let that leak out. But yeah, you can tell he's comfortable not only as a player, but also with the rest of his teammates. He's becoming more and more of an LSU player here, and he's earned that definitely with his play.
All right, buddy, I can't thank you enough for the update. So not so great for Nick Brissett. John Battle a little bit better, and Alexander was the strongest guy at the pro day for LSU. That kind of sums it up.
Yeah, well, you know, one last one, Terrence Alexander. He ran a 4.5. I'm not sure if he'll find his way into the camp, but played a lot at nickel and was the starting cornerback towards the end once Christian Fulton got injured. So, you know, he may get a good look. We'll see. And you know, that his size is a little bit smaller than most corners, but he might get a shot at nickel somewhere. That's a kind of an underrated position in the league now.
Brooks, you're the best, buddy. I can't thank you enough. Have a great weekend, my friend. Enjoy the weather.
You too, Joy.
All right, take care. Brooks Cabina, The Advocate, with the very latest on LSU football. We'll take our final timeout of the day. We'll wrap this bad boy up. We'll get you up to speed. What's going on with Virginia? Is Tennessee nail-biter? All the latest from the NCAA tournament to wrap things up here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Stick around.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, 50 minutes after the hour as we wrap this baby up, let's get you updated on scores. Tennessee 67, Colgate 62, approaching the two-minute mark of the ball game. Colgate making a nice little representation of themselves, and they just made a bucket. So it's now a one-possession game, 150 to go, 67-64 Tennessee. Virginia has righted the ship. And they are now up by 13, 57-44 over 16th-seeded Gardner-Webb with 8:34 to play. Big possession for Tennessee. They need a bucket badly. Admiral Schofield from the wing, three ball is good, 70-64. He's good, man. He's a player. He's a smaller version of Karl Malone. I hate to say that, but he is. He's got that big, big body. Not afraid to take you inside, but the velvet touch on the outside as well. And now Grant Williams with the return to sender. So Tennessee looks like with 108 to go, I can't believe Colgate's not going to foul. I don't understand that, but they're going to play out the clock. So Buffalo, a sixth seed over Arizona State, Bobby Hurley's club, 33-21. Very early Wisconsin, a five seed with a 7-4 lead over 12th-seeded Oregon. Six on the shot clock. Schofield from the corner again. You got to be kidding me. Knocks down another three ball, and Tennessee keeps the SEC alive and well. 73-64, 45.8 seconds to go. Schofield with back-to-back three balls from the same spot on the floor and telling the fans to shh, be quiet. It was right in front of his bench in Columbus, Ohio. So we've got that. If you're a big LSU gymnastics fan, well, the place to be is in the Crescent City. Number three ranked LSU, the number one seed in the SEC tournament, will go for its third straight SEC championship Saturday night, 7 p.m. inside the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans. So you know LSU fans are going to make the trek down there. You know they're going to pack that place up. I spoke to Dede Bro earlier in the week on a Wednesday. She said 9,000 tickets had been sold. There'll be a lot of walk-up tickets for that. Don't go to Ticketmaster and all that. Just go to the arena and buy them. There's no surcharge on it, and you'll get in there for cheaper. Just a little tidbit for you and for yours. So, all right, CD, let me bring you in one more time before we get on out of here. So your bracket's looking good. It's holding up still right here, right now. You still okay?
Yeah, I mean, only missed like three guys. And honestly, for the most part, though, they weren't going to go much further than that. And honestly, right now, we're seeing Virginia right now. They're starting to pull away against Gardner-Webb. So that's going to be under control. Mind you, I had them losing in the second round, though. I had them original to Ole Miss, but I like their chances to lose against Oklahoma, though. So that could wind up being working out okay. Like I said, overall, not too bad. It's 16-19 right now.
That's good. That's very good.
Yeah, maybe the SEC, most years.
Yeah, the SEC is doing very, very well. LSU advanced. Kentucky advanced. Florida advanced. Ole Miss got beat. Tennessee's going to advance. You've got Mississippi State playing today. And I'm missing somebody. Who am I missing? Who am I? Auburn. Auburn won a nail biter yesterday, 78-77. So they survived. So right now with LSU, Kentucky, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, 5-1 as we speak. So, yeah, SEC's doing pretty darn well. So good for them. Again, let's go over things. We've got LSU baseball tonight, 5:30 pregame, 6 o'clock first pitch in Athens, Georgia. Tomorrow, Saturday, we'll have the LSU basketball game. 10:30 will be the start of the pregame show. Tip right around 10 after 11 Saturday morning. So we'll have that. And then we'll have the third game of the LSU baseball series against Georgia, and that is 11 o'clock our time, CD, is that correct?
Yeah, it's going to be 11 o'clock our time, 10:30 pregame.
10:30 pregame, okay, very, very good. So we got you covered wall to wall, and I'm just hoping against hope. I'm hoping against hope that we'll be talking about LSU in the Sweet 16 heading to Washington, D.C. for a Thursday night matchup against whomever. So that would, I haven't even looked at that. I don't have a bracket in front of me. So I don't know if they win tomorrow who they would go up against, but that's, we got plenty of time to talk about that next week. So again, LSU Maryland. Expect LSU to play a lot better in game number two, but expect Maryland to play better as well. I like the matchup because I think athletically, I think LSU is superior. I just think we have more and better players than Maryland. This is not the greatest Maryland basketball team, but they're in there. They're dangerous. I think the backcourt is the difference for LSU. I think Naz Reid and Cavell Bigby-Williams will hold their own against the front court of Maryland. I believe the difference is in the backcourt. I look for Skylar Mays and Tremont Waters and Javonte Smart to have a much better advantage in the matchup against Maryland. So I look for LSU to survive and advance. LSU would take on the winner of Michigan State or Minnesota. So look for Michigan State to get out of their regional and get to the Sweet 16. I think the Richard Pitino run has come to a close after they upset Louisville, but I think it's a two and through for the Golden Gophers. So it's been a fun week, all week long. Special thanks to our guests today, Jeff Duncan, Patrick Ebert of Perfect Game Talking Baseball, Jacob Bergeron. What I wish him nothing but the best at the Chittimacha Open, and Brooks Cabina. It's been fun all week long. It really has. If it's your birthday today, man, happy birthday from all of us here at 103.7 The Game. Clint, outstanding job all week. Thank you to all of you for listening. Thumbs up. And to our partners for making it possible each and every day, thumbs up to you as well. We only have one of these Fridays, March 22nd. Enjoy the day. Enjoy the weekend. Come on back Monday, same time, same station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfberg. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty, and go Tigers!